Angelica, welcome to Dare to Dream. It is so great to finally have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm very much looking forward to our conversation on embodiment and healing from trauma. And I want to start there so people have an idea of the work that you do out in the world. I read a quote about your embodiment work, and it reads this: "The embodiment process helps you move into an open ocean of self-love, joy, empowering accountability, and compassion. Your life purpose not only becomes clear and accessible, it becomes a path of daily living." Wow. Talk about your work. What is that embodiment process, and what does it consist of?
Well, I guess I would start by saying how I discovered along my own journey how much anxiety and difficulty I was having as a young person, feeling settled, feeling like I could participate in the world in a more settled, peaceful way. And I really didn't know that I had a lot of trauma, but that's really what there was. There was a lot of trauma there and a lot of anxiety as a result. So I was really boiling over. And so the embodiment process, my work, was really born out of my own journey with dealing with severe anxiety and really PTSD anxiety, not just sort of general anxiety, but I had had a lot of surgeries that had registered in my body. I was very sensitive, as I am today, and really had no background in how to deal with that level of sensitivity and was trying to fit into the world at a pace that really didn't work for me. So I started out by coming into my body through different trainings and teachers and trying to understand what was happening for me. So that was the beginning. And it really led me to understand trauma and what was happening for me, and that I was really what we would say outside of my window of tolerance, because I was I had accumulated so many experiences over time that had acute traumatic effects in my body. I think sometimes people think anxiety is a mental problem, and it is really a nervous system issue that can start from the earliest origins of our lives.
Wow. PTSD, anxiety, a lot of surgeries, and a nervous system issue. Can you talk a little bit about that? What is that like in someone's body from inception to as they grow older?
Sure. So a lot of my work revolves around looking at epigenetic trauma, which is like transgenerational trauma, meaning we may have inherited trauma from our parents or our grandparents, and generationally, there's a lot of research out right now regarding this, that we can actually come in with a certain amount of epigenetic anxiety or propensity towards anxiety or depression, even though we may not have had actual acute traumatic experiences. And there's also a lot of research and understanding today that our embryonic and our womb state is deeply impacts our psyche as we come into the world. So these early states of consciousness and our experience are actually informing our epigenetics and how we grow into a nervous system that is either fully functioning or perhaps lacks some resiliency. So nervous system regulation is a key term that people use in trauma work to understand why somebody might be sort of stuck on, not able to slow down or come down. And that could look like obsessive thinking. It could look like heart palpitations. There's a myriad of symptoms or phenomena that are associated with what we would call maybe anxiety. And this is often when the nervous system really cannot come down and regulate because of, like I said, either some epigenetic trauma or things that happened early in life that we may not have cognitive memories for. So it's not just the big things that happen later in life that that affect us that we might have memories for. It can also be earlier information that occurred. Perhaps our parents were struggling or divorcing while we were very young. These really impact our ability to self-regulate, or if our mothers were overwhelmed as well.
Hmm. You know, you've said, this is a quote from you, it's easier for people to look through the lens of anxiety or a particular problem that they perceive they have, but what is really going on is something happening in the person's soul journey. As a healer, That's amazing to me that you can actually perceive a person's soul journey. Talk about what is that like, or what does it look like to you, or how do you access that information?
So everybody has access to this at one level. So when we talk about the embodiment process as a way of working, we're really understanding, or biodynamic work for that matter, it's really an understanding that we are whole. We have a blueprint that is unencumbered by any of the imprinting that we take on from either our past in epigenetic work or even past lives or that we took on early in life. Those would be considered imprints, but we have a blueprint that is really our divinity or our soul that is not encumbered by the traumatic impact of or impressions that we might have taken on. So when someone has enough experience or spent enough inner reflective time and been able to digest or metabolize a lot of the trauma or experiences that they may have come in with, you develop a capacity to witness and strengthen in an embodied way the ability to stay neutral and to perceive others, and you really begin to deepen your awareness that everything is serving the soul at some level, that nothing is really about harming us or hurting us, that we are often very much just developing survival strategies and perceiving things the way we need to for our highest protective survival nature. So to be able to perceive that happens through understanding one's own trauma and seeing the health in another person, seeing their blueprint versus their imprint without negating the imprint, without negating their circumstances.
Interesting. The blueprint versus the imprint. And so with all of what you're capable of, how, and I'm clear hearing you what it sounds like you can do with clients, what you can do in a group situation. So for listeners who want to call in, how will you work with them? What should they expect or what's possible in the few minutes they'll have with you?
Well, I think we talked a little bit just about the beginning of the work that I've created, which is really about first coming into your body and being able to settle into oneself with a sense of peace, a sense of safety. And that's really why I called it the embodiment process, because we really are coming into ourselves more and more as we evolve, even though we may be reaching towards soul potential. The more regulated the nervous system is and our nervous systems are, the more human and sustainable we become. So part of the process is whether or not somebody's really just dealing with the basic survival strategies. They're still caught in those imprints in a way that make it really challenging to even operate in life. And then oftentimes people like that feel that they are very isolated because of the thinking that occurs around having so much fearful or out of regulation kind of feelings and thoughts. That's a lot to overcome. And then, you know, as you go deeper into a process like the embodiment process, you actually begin to touch in on your gifting and actually what's your purpose? What are you here for? It's very challenging for people to step into that if they're experiencing so much anxiety or fear. So I think it depends on whether or not they're looking for something larger or they're working with something that really affects their kind of day-to-day experience.
Hmm. And in your own healing process, Angelica, that you mentioned, what happened? So you went through all of that and you started to recognize your level of trauma, your PTSD, the anxiety, the nervous system, and that you were about to boil over. And, of course, you said you aligned yourself with several different things that allowed you to have freedom. What was the arcing thing or the bridge that allowed you to get where you are and is today very different for you in functioning?
Yeah, I would say it's very different. I mean, I really just wanted to get out of my anxiety. You know, I was really struggling and suffering quite a bit. And I have a lot of humility and respect for that situation and those circumstances, mine and other people's, because it's very challenging. And I was not a person who felt like I could medicate, or at least not often. It just didn't work for me. So I would say that, you know, it was a combination of things. I felt like my sensitivity worked for me, and I was able to perceive relief over time. And I had no idea that working all of that out would lead me to a huge opening in understanding my own gifts. I mean, I did not try to become a medical intuitive or a psychic or any of those things. I really was committed to helping people who had been traumatized, because I had been, and I understood their circumstances. And it just opened up a whole new awareness that oftentimes people's health crises are their greatest moments of transformation. Mm-hmm. And when you're held and witnessed by a person or practitioner or a guide or someone you're working with who can see that, it allows us to really deepen and widen our perspective and our consciousness in a way that feels more supported, more faith-filled, and more dynamic, and it avails us to, a higher place inside of ourselves. It's inspiring to know that we could use our experiences for a higher potentiation in ourselves.
Mm. That's fascinating to me, and thank you for sharing that story. I'm fascinated because I discovered you by reading in Oprah's magazine, O Magazine, in February, an article that a journalist put out about you. And, of course, in this particular article, she came to you for anxiety. And it was fascinating, I think, because she was a great skeptic, which always makes the story better in coming into it. But the way she described you and some of the methods, and then, of course, the article ends that she leaves having worked with you, not just once but several times, but anxiety-free. Like, it's clear her life has changed. And I'm curious how your life has changed since working with her and that article came out.
Well, I mean, I think it was, you know, quite a surprise to me. It wasn't something I knew was going to happen, so I felt very fortunate, and I was grateful that I think anytime anyone writes something about you, especially when you are as committed to the integrity of supporting and helping other people as I am, you want the things to be written and said about you that really reflect that quality. And I felt like it was really a blessing to have a person who had been through the process, who really did have a severe anxiety issue, really come to know themselves better. And to this day, I still see her at times, and she really does have more and more freedom and is more connected to her body and much more confident, much more intuitive, much more capable of navigating her life from an adult place. And that little girl that was dealing with the levels of neglect and epigenetic trauma that she had is much more supported by her spiritual adult, which is part of the process. And while she may not hear it all the time, I can hear it, and she certainly is aware of her own competency and forthrightness in her life. So I just feel blessed that anyone would be able to express in writing, you know, something that was so profound for them and that it was helpful.
Yeah, and, you know, the ripples. I am sure I am but a little nut and bolt in the cog, but to figure I read that in February, and I have had sessions with you now, and now here you are on the radio show, and there are people now listening who will come to know you, and I love the sense of one deed like that, and bless that journalist for forthrightness and writing such a great article that depicted you, I think, very accurately in your potency and what's possible. But the ripple effect is we're living it right now on air live. I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what you were talking about earlier, you know, the creativity, and I think that when, you know, if I were to say that the process I went through and the reason I created the work I did is because I felt my own lostness when I had such bad anxiety, and I have really landed over the years in my purpose and in my passion, and I love to be of service to others, so to be acknowledged for that and to be able to help more people is, I feel like, one of the major intentions that anyone who comes to be of service has. So I feel fulfilled by that. And also I feel like I'm able to walk my talk and live my life in the way that I would ask others or help others to. So
when we come back, we're going to find out more from Angelica and talk about neuroscience or neural science, and how the nervous system affects us and informs us. Angelica, you have a neuroscience background. Today, that's sort of the coolest thing in a way, because we've all become heightenedly aware of what that means. So neuroscience is the study of how the nervous system develops, its structure, what it does. talk about how does neuroscience inform or influence your work or even your clients?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of what happens to us, in at least I can speak in the Western culture that we live in, is that we're not really taught about the basics of our nervous system, which is a huge part of how we live in the world. And, you know, I always think we all need a class, and, you know, one of the first introductory workshops I teach is about how to be a human being 101, because I really believe that we have these amazing intelligent vehicles that we call our bodies and our nervous systems, and we don't know how to drive them properly. We have Ferraris, and sometimes we're driving them like a Ford Pinto. We don't step into the intricacy and the intelligence because we're not really taught what that means. So neuroscience is a way, when broken down into very fundamental elements, to understand how does the body regulate itself. How do we take in stimuli? How do we process things? So what I do when I work with my clients is really help them reattune to their own nervous system, which means that early staging of development, a baby, infant, prenatal staging, is a very slow need for low stimulation and obviously deep connective attunement to the mother. So if that's disrupted or there's challenges, we're going to start creating imprints, which begins to shrink what we call in the nervous system world the window of tolerance, which is the window of tolerance for stress, how much stimuli we can actually take in. And when those imprints are very intense and the body gets overwhelmed, we start to move out of our window of tolerance, which some of us would say go into a overly sympathetic state, which is the nervous system likes to cycle between parasympathetic and sympathetic. So basic nervous system understanding of how do we self-regulate, what is attunement, what did we need from our mothers, and what didn't we get, and how did that affect our consciousness and the neural pathways of perception, meaning do we perceive that life is safe and can we be curious and alert? When we've had an attuned mother and not a lot of trauma, we tend to be more open and more regulated because we were looked after in a particular way. Our mothers were able to literally metabolize our feelings and hold a safe container. When that is disrupted, our nervous systems are impacted by that, including our neuroendocrine system. So the thyroid, the adrenals, the cortisol levels in our bodies are not impacted just from when we're an adult. They start from a very young age, and the neural pathways that form create our perception of reality, whether we perceive safety or not. And this has a huge impact on how we relate in relationship and how we do when relating to ourselves.
I imagine, too, that people who are born in a country that perhaps doesn't have the freedom, like the United States, communism or otherwise, could have experiences also like this, where their nervous system is taxed, or a culture maybe where a woman is not honored like as much, if I might say that, as she is here in the U.S., but where there's, you know, a lot of strict rules, and maybe she's not the same class, or maybe even, you know, something that has to do with money and a class system in another culture. That could also create a lot of nervous system issues, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that absolutely. And also, when you think about hundreds or even thousands of years of passed down trauma along those lines, and that's really the newest cutting edge neuroscience and research, which is epigenetic trauma, which means that epigenetics is basically a study where they discovered that certain genes could be turned on and off on the DNA, which means that circumstances can create the nurture. They don't separate nurture and nature so much anymore, because what they're realizing is that the experience of circumstances of the mother can turn on the epigenetics of their infant coming in. So even though a person did not live through the Holocaust, they might be reacting in a survival-oriented way because of their grandparents or their parents. So this is some of the cultural challenges, but there are also cultures that, unlike the United States, who have much tighter bonds in terms of their willingness to stay in a more tribal, connected environment with each other. Their families are much tighter, whereas here, we individuation and the branding of the individual is very, very important, which has its own shortcomings, whereas other cultures have that village tribal connection, and children can feel, and people that grow up in that culture have different levels of regulation because of that.
Mm. Yes, that's so, so true. To grow up in a tribe where you're supported, and as they say, there were once upon a time when a child was born, it wasn't just the mother, father, or the father, father, mother, mother raising the child, that
right.
It was often in a culture where there were so many to take care of and nurture. And
yeah, there was an extended family.
Extended family, and wow, to experience that level of safety and surety in one's life. Yeah,
all of these
point.
Things are impacting, you know, our perception, our awareness, what we come into. So there are challenges in both, on both sides.
Fantastic. Well, we have a caller, and I apologize. I couldn't hear what the name was, but I'm completely free and happy to bring on the caller, and I welcome you to Dare to Dream Radio. If you would be so kind to give us your name, your first name, and any question that you have for Angelica succinctly, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, Angelina. It's Siddiqui. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, Siddiqui. And just so you know, it's Angelica. Thank you for coming on
Angelica.
The show.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry about that. People massacre my name on a regular basis as well.
Great to have you.
Thank you. So my question is, I'm in this really big conflict with a client who is also a friend, and it's kind of a reoccurring.
Can you come closer to the phone a little bit?
Yeah. Is this better?
That's good. That's good, yeah.
Okay. It's a reoccurring theme I have to have these conflicts, and it really shakes my confidence in what I do. And I'm wondering if there's some deeper message, some deeper meaning, something more that I need to own in order to clear this, in order for it to not keep happening.
Okay, so what exactly is it that's happening?
This particular person is just super angry at me because I set a boundary after not setting boundaries, not being really clear, like, this is too much, I can't do this, this is outside the scope of what I'm capable of, and I'm really sorry I can't do it. And then she came back and she's like being very, very angry and unreasonable, and threatening to sue me.
Okay, so what I would say is that I don't know how much you know about me, but obviously I'm just going to kind of go in there. There's something with your father. Did your father know how to hold boundaries with people?
No.
Right. So this is an epigenetic piece.
Right.
So if you just think about the reason why your father must have not, it would have been, wasn't life or death for your father, but there's a reason why he wasn't able to do that. It had to do with his father, not his mother.
Right, right.
So there was something that your father was doing that, I think it has to do with shame.
Yeah.
Do you know what happened with your grandfather and your father?
Well, I know that my dad was on the Olympic bike racing team and that he was really desperate for my grandfather's approval and that he quit the Olympic bike racing team to be a doctor so that he could get my grandfather's approval.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather still, like, didn't approve of him until the day he died. It was just tragic.
Right.
Really sad.
Right. Right. So there's shame associated. So your father didn't get the love that he wanted. He didn't feel that his father loved him.
Yeah, for what he really wanted to do, for his dream.
For his dream, right. So he has that associated with his dream. So can you see how this ties into your own experience of having a hard time with boundaries?
Yes. Yeah.
That you're not getting approval from these people when you do your own thing for yourself?
Yeah, more importantly, not sticking to my dreams, because my father told me that if I did what I really wanted to do, that it would be evil and that it would be a sin.
It would be
and,
evil?
Yeah, that it would be evil. And so when I step outside of that to try to do something that's more acceptable, this is what happens. Like, people get angry and upset because I can't do it. I'm not as good at, you know, say graphic design or whatever as I am at being an intuitive and being a guide for people.
It's a strange thing that your dad would say you were evil.
Yeah, he said that being a psychic or being an intuitive is tapping into, like, the realm of darkness and evil. And he said that no matter how good I was at it or how many people I helped or how famous I became, that it would still always lead me down the path of evil. That's literally what he said.
Well, that seems like your father has a real problem with his own intuition. And maybe, you know, that it's very scary for him to open up to feeling and having a more experiential life.
True, yes.
I mean, yeah. That's also where dreams and inspiration are born.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, your particular challenge is to find the strength to understand that, you know, shame and being a prisoner of being shamed and having to choose a very structured left brain way of being is, you know, obviously, is your family, are they American? Are they Western? Are they?
They're American, yeah.
They're American, So shame is a very powerful weapon and prison for a way of controlling our children, you know, and controlling people's behavior.
Yeah. Yes, it so is.
So
and
I
you're
would
right. It is epigenetics. It is definitely tied into the gene pool in the family on both sides. Yeah.
Yeah, so I would look at, just for yourself, being able to let yourself honor and really individuate and differentiate his holding of that pattern around shame and associating, pursuing your inspiration and your dreams, which is very, very much about intuition, right brain experiences. You know, that is really how we tap into what is our soul here to uncover, where, how are we unfolding into it. And even this particular piece is providing you with a level of resistance so that you can really uncover who you are.
Yeah. Yes.
It's much harder to see that if we can't put back where it actually started and see the layers and how your parents or your grandparents participated in that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you for the call, Siddiqui. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the show, and thank you for this amazing insight.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I'm thinking about some, you know, Siddiqui sort of feels like every man to me right now, every woman, for those of us who came in with epigenetics at our back, already on our back, and in a sense, for the bold and the brave who are working it out now in our lifetime to end it here, not just for ourselves, but for our ancestors and lineage. It's a big thing to take on and agree to do. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
It takes a very brave soul. Yeah. So my hat is off to all of you Siddiquis and other out there who have chosen to really take a look at and open up to what's going on within you in this life, but also that you've brought forward. And I also think our ancestors are on the other side going, yay, thank you. Yay, thank you. So we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You can find me on Twitter. My name, Debbie Dashinger, and this is Dare to Dream. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Angelica Singh. And Angelica, I would love to know what's next up for you, how you're displaying your gifts out into the world or sharing it with us, and how can we connect with you?
Well, I am very much interested in continuing to facilitate people and educate them in the way that I am now, and I'm actually right now working on an online class because I have clients all over the country and the world, and just to be able to access people in their homes because not everyone can come to Los Angeles, and I don't always be able to make it to other places. So that's really a broken-down class of giving people the tools and the resources they need to really come into their bodies and start to develop more of a witness state, clear anxieties, get more familiar with their own humanity, their own humanness, and, you know, have a therapeutic and an educational process where they can access more of their possibilities and potential. So that's on the agenda. That will come out in January of next year. And then I have ongoing workshops. I have a workshop, an embodiment process bound workshop in June from the 1st to the 4th. That's in Los Angeles. And one in, again in July. And, you know, I'll keep doing workshops and teaching trainings as I go.
Beautiful. Wonderful, wonderful. And Dare to Dream, what do you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams or goals or targets?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I love helping people, and I'll always participate in being of service in some way. But I think things change over time because I was so committed to working out my own problems, and because I got so much better and I was able to become of service in such a fulfilling way, it opens me up to, I feel like being creative is one of my, always a dream. So writing for me, and not just to self-help, but really writing fiction and poetry, that's really my love, one of my loves and passions.
Wow. Nice. I always support authors. It's a beautiful thing, yeah, to put out in the world. You talked in the beginning about anxiety, everything from the woman who came to you and wrote this unexpected article in O Magazine to your own journey with anxiety and what's possible. And for people out there who have this, live with this, how can they work with and manage anxiety? What are some tips and tools?
Well, I think that understanding it better is one thing that helps. I think that sometimes people need to work with a qualified practitioner, obviously helps, but really coming into your body in a different way. Anxiety and sort of moving into a sympathetically alert state that's outside of the window of tolerance, as we were talking earlier, is a lot like boiling water. And it's like it always goes up. The steam goes up. So our energy tends to go very up and very fast. I call it, you know, we get in a rev. Our nervous system is in a rev, which is like a car that's, you know, if you ever drive a stick in second gear going, trying to go 50, 60 miles an hour and hear the transmission just burning. So that's kind of what the nervous system does when it's in that state. So we want to get it so that we can downshift. And downshifting in the physical body looks like feeling the ground, trying to actually contract the muscles in the legs and in the butt, and keeping ourselves as low down in our body and slowing down. So it really depends on the heightened state of anxiety. If it's a lower state of anxiety, it might be easier. If it's more heightened, oftentimes what I have people do, or even myself, if I get, you know, in a fight or flight state that I, again, is outside of the window of tolerance, I push up against something because the energy loves to dissipate through the periphery, through your arms and through your legs. And when you contract the muscle and release, it gives the body an opportunity to discharge some of the energy. Obviously, staying off your phone and your computer and overstimulation late at night mm-hmm. helps with that kind of overthinking before you go to bed. You know, really slowing things down and down-regulating before we sleep. And having down-regulating practices, baths and, you know, herbal tea, things like that. And sometimes that's not strong enough, so it really just depends on the state. But I think in the immediate moment, taking deep breaths and pushing down and really working to get one's energy lower in the body.
Hmm. I want to let people know that you're coming back. So this is not your only time on the show. Angelica is going to be coming back to the show again in June and then again in July. You're going to want to check back in because next time she's going to be talking about your inner authority and specifically working with listeners to assist in real empowerment while ending guilt and shame. Do you relate? And if so, it may be time to have some responsibility for your feelings, projecting, reward, and punishment. And I am very excited to further this conversation and introduction for you to her and her work. And Angelica, thank you so much for coming on the show today and for all your gifts.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Such a pleasure. Well, I end today's show with this quote from Angelica Singh, which is, "In the end, everything wants to be seen and heard, and everything serves."